Matt on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. The state of Canadian multiculturalism is the subject of a recent book from Environics President Michael Adams. In Unlikely Utopia, the Surprising Triumph of Canadian Pluralism, we read that the Canadian experiment of multiculturalism has worked. Through polling data and research, Adams finds out Canadians are proud of multiculturalism and continue to champion it. Should we be so optimistic, though? Adams, though presenting a positive report, also outlines how we ought not to be too smug, that there are still realities and challenges we need to overcome. As the Bouchard-Taylor Commission in Quebec looks at reasonable accommodation, this is a timely and informative read, published by Viking. Unlikely Utopia retails for $34. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program Michael Adams. Good morning, Mr. Adams.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
You dedicate the book to whom?
Oh, to whom?
Yes.
Well, three young people. That's interesting. I've never been asked this before, but the three young people are recipients of an award I give, a literary competition in my old high school in Rexdale. And these three young people, they're grade 11 students. They come. It's a very, very diverse area that they live in. It's changed a lot since my day in the 60s when I grew up in Rexdale. They come from all over the planet. Their parents often are not very well off. And they're typically first or second generation or 1.5 generation came to Canada when they were just little, you know, young people. One of them is actually doing English as a second language. And they write a competition for this scholarship based on it's a story that they write about their experience of coming from somewhere else and coming to Canada, coming to Rexdale, and or an experience of actually growing up in Rexdale or Toronto, and what that experience is like. And so I started this a couple of years ago. The first winner was Ranbir Singh, the scholarship actually is their first year in college or university in Ontario, and I'm happy to say that Ranbir won it when he was in grade 11, and he graduated from grade 12, and he's now attending York University studying social science. So I just felt they kind of, for me, represented a positive story about Canada and about their coming here, about them succeeding in education, pursuing education, and I hope that they'll also be very successful Canadian citizens, parents, employers, employees, and so on, and will be part of the multicultural story of Canada. I thank you for asking.
I didn't know anything about these people, but I just now that you've explained it to us, it does build into the theme of the book, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and maybe in a modest way, the fact that I, you know, took it on myself to extend my hand. I did something in a way that I was able to do something. It had a meaningful connection to me, my old high school that has changed so dramatically, just like Canada has changed. And I don't know, the idea came to me 3 or 4 years ago. I've got a committee of my former publisher and former high school teacher who actually taught me in Rexdale, who were sitting on the committee and reading all these essays every spring. So it feels good for me to do something that's meaningful for me, and then it's also helping, I hope, in a small way, these particular Canadians make the transition for their families from places around the world they've come from to successfully integrating into Canadian society.
So talk to us about what you found out in this, in writing this book, and in all the polling that you did about Canadians' attitudes towards immigration. We obviously need it, but how do we feel about it?
Well, we feel quite positive about it. We don't think immigrants come and take jobs away from Canadians. We think they're good for the economy. We don't think they are any more likely to commit crime than other Canadians are. So generally, we think that it's a very good thing for Canada. And so our attitudes are positive, and they are much more positive than a lot of other countries, United States or Australia or the European countries, when it comes to their attitudes about immigrants. In other countries, they're much more ambivalent, and often with significant numbers of people in the public who are actually quite negative about the immigrant populations in their country.
Hey, you live in Toronto, I live in Vancouver. That's generally the idea. Is there a divide, though, between those of us that live in urban settings as opposed to those who live in rural Canada?
Yeah, and it's interesting. We did a special survey for the book, and we surveyed Canadian public opinion and Canadian Muslims in Canada about what it was like, you know, to be in Canada for them. They are the new other who are, you know, especially since 9/11, a lot of people concerned about, you know, Muslims and potential things like, well, the terrorism we've seen in European countries or riots in Paris. Of course, other concerns that people have had, of course, you referred to Quebec earlier about the whole question of hijabs and niqabs and hijabs on the soccer pitch, niqabs in the polling booths, and so on. So I surveyed these people, found out that Muslims in Canada are very happy to be here, want to integrate, also want their traditions to be accommodated in this country. That does lead to some frictions and some issues. And I further found out when I was surveying public opinion that the more likely you were to have interaction with someone who adheres to the religion of Islam, the more likely you are to interact with them, the more positive you are about that religion and about Muslims in general. Obviously, the opposite of that is true as well, that the less likely you are to have interaction, the more likely you are to be basing your image on, well, again, things that you might have seen in the media, and images of Muslims in the media over the last number of years have typically not been positive. So a lot of people who are only basing it on media images have a much greater concern about Muslims in our country than those who actually have interaction with them. And that what that shows then in the research is that people in Toronto, people in Vancouver, people in cities where there are a large number of Muslim people are the most positive about that minority, that new, relatively new minority in our country.
And immigrants, they're usually settling in urban settings, is that what you find?
But typically, yeah. I mean, you've got, mainly the majority are settling in the major urban areas. Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver are the main places. But over the last 5 years, we also are seeing people going to increasing numbers to cities like Calgary, Ottawa, Gatineau area, and so on. So they're typically going to the major urban areas. You've got 40% foreign-born in Vancouver, and Toronto is 45%, and very significant proportion foreign-born here.
What do Canadians in general say about the frictions that may arise between ethnic groups?
Well, they are the newspapers are going to be filled with stories of where things don't work out, and I guess I don't know if people had to name probably the worst instance of things not working out. It probably was in 1985. It's a long time ago now, with the Air India catastrophe, where basically you had Hindus and Sikhs living in the West Coast, carrying on disputes that were going on in India, only fighting, you know, the battles that were going on in India here. And this is interesting. Here we are 23 years later, still hasn't really been resolved. We still really, we suspect who we think was behind it, but it really has not been resolved. So that's a terrible thing that has happened. The good news about it is that fortunately it hasn't led to the war of all against all or continuing battles between these two groups. I think it's been seen by the majority of people in both communities that this is a tragedy and must never be repeated. So it's one of those terrible news stories, but also fortunately, unlike a lot of areas of the world where something like that would lead to, a low-grade war between groups, it really hasn't happened in Canada. I think people also will remember in the Toronto area the arrest of 18 young Muslim men and boys suspected of plotting terrorism. They were going to blow up the CN tower or the CDC building or something like that. But that has yet come to trial, and we don't really know, again, whether or not it was, you know, was it a serious plot or was it serious for one or two people, but the others were kind of misled. Not quite sure, but certainly that led a lot of people to kind of be concerned. And then beyond the issue of terrorism, of course, there's the whole question of integration. And you know, there are incidents where, or issues in public policy, which are where you see these frictions again. You know, should young Muslim women be allowed to wear their hijabs on the soccer pitch? Should women wearing niqabs show their faces when they're voting? What about Sharia law? Again, you know, for the settlement of issues between husband and a wife and so on, that was something that Ontario decided against, that we have the laws of Canada, we've got family law and the law and the charter, and we're pretty strong on gender equality here, and we don't want to accommodate religious beliefs where we don't think gender equality is going to be executed. And so, you know, there are issues where, you know, we are debating what the Quebecers call reasonable accommodation. When do we kind of bend over backwards and say, look, if a Sikh guy wants to wear his turban and also enter the Mounties, that's okay? On the other hand, there are instances where we say, well, no, the Canadians are, we have our laws, we have our charter, we have our criminal code, and when you come to this country, you obey those laws. So we do find the public is questioning whether or not immigrants whether they're really going over, you know, whether they're accommodating and integrating into Canadian society. And some people are thinking, oh, we the majority, are accommodating them, and we'd like to see more evidence that they're integrating into our society. And, of course, I would say that they are, but it's the things you're going to read about in the newspapers are going to be when there's some sort of conflict. But the power of integration in our society, integrating into the school system, the public school system in particular, integrating into the workplace, integrating into the broader urban life that most people are involved in, these are very, very powerful forces of integration, being exposed to television, being exposed to the internet. And what we see among second generation immigrants is that they are, for the vast majority of them, are quite successfully integrating into the Canadian economy, into the Canadian education system, and are in almost all indicators are becoming very successful Canadians.
Even politics?
Well, politics is even a is an especially positive story. We have 19% foreign-born in this country, and you'd expect, well, maybe we'd have 19% foreign-born in our House of Commons. Well, we don't. We have 13% foreign-born. So you could say, well, that's not so great. But then you go and have a look at Canadians vis-a-vis other countries in the world, the French, the Brits, the Americans, the Australians, and so on, and Canada looks astoundingly successful, where we have a much higher proportion of people. Again, we should have probably 59 people in the House of Commons, and it turns out we have 41 members of who have been born abroad who are in our House of Commons. Take the United States, the melting pot to the south. They have 14% foreign-born in America. There should be 52 members of the House of Representatives who are foreign-born, and in fact there are only 8. So we have a vast majority of immigrants who come to this country, take out Canadian citizenship, they become integrated into the political system, and of course the ultimate expression of citizenship is actually feeling that you can run as a candidate for a political party, and that you can be elected by the electors in a riding, and only a very small number of these people who are elected, foreign-born members, are elected in ridings where, you know, their group, if all their group votes for them, it's enough to put them in Parliament. They have to appeal to a wide variety of people to get into the House of Commons. So
parties are, I mean, we used to hear all the time that the Liberal Party owned, had a monopoly on the immigrant vote. Is that still the case?
Well, you know, I think there may be a tilt toward the Liberal Party, but in fact, if you look at in our House of Commons, we've got foreign-born members in the Conservative Party. 12 of their parliamentary caucus of 126 are foreign-born. The Liberals, it's 21 foreign-born out of the 96 members of the House of Commons. The Bloc even has 3 members of the House of Commons who are foreign-born. And the NDP have 5 out of the 30 members of their caucus. So here's another example where Canada would be the only country in the world, the only democracy in the world, which would have foreign-born members in all political parties. In most other countries, there are political parties that are actually anti-immigrant. They would run on a xenophobic platform, and certainly there are more conservative parties that would tend to be more nationalist, more chauvinist, who would be questioning immigration and multiculturalism in their societies. In our country, one could say even our conservative party, and I don't want to say that in a way that it presumes that why would a conservative party be open to multiculturalism, but certainly our conservative party is the most open, the most tolerant, and the most and very open to having people who are foreign-born. The Conservative Party in Canada wants to have a broad cross-section of people from around the world supporting their party. It's the only way they can ever conceive of actually forming a majority government if they are able to appeal to the foreign-born and to visible minorities. So it's, again, another good news story about Canada, which is kind of unique in the world in the sense that the foreign-born feel at home throughout the ideological spectrum, conservative, liberal, or social democratic, or even joining a separatist party, the Bloc Québécois. It's remarkable that is an outcome in our country.
And I was just thinking about that. You said there are 3 foreign-born Bloc MPs.
Yeah.
And do you find
two of whom are women?
yeah. Now. Is that, because this builds into the fourth chapter of your book where you talk about what's going on in Quebec.
Yeah.
People that are first or second generation immigrants, or children of immigrants, they're adopting sort of separatist ideals as well. Do you find that?
They're integrating into the, I mean, we know that, I don't know, anywhere between 25 and 50% of Quebecers are going to be sovereignist, are going to want an independent Quebec or some version of independence. And it's interesting that foreign-born come to Quebec, and one would presume or one would assume that they're all going to be supporting a Federalist Party, they're going to be voting Liberal or Conservative and so on, but it turns out, in fact, that as over time, when they get integrated into the political system, they feel comfortable supporting a party that wants more autonomy or even independence for Quebec. So I think, in a sense, I think that's good news, because it's saying that the PQ, the BQ, and so on wants to reach out to ethnic and cultural minorities and join in what they consider their magnificent project.
And this whole the Bouchard Taylor thing in Quebec about unreasonable accommodation, we seem to, from what we read and from what I read in this part of the country, from what we get out of there, is that these frictions are being exposed regularly.
Yeah.
Is that the sense, though, that you get from your polling, that people are perhaps wary, or that they're afraid, or that they're I don't know how to put it, that they're wondering what sort of Quebec they want, and
yeah, I mean, this is, Joe, this is, one of the ways to kind of understand this is to look at the context. Quebecers are, you know, this is an incredible thing that's happened, that this, over the centuries, that Quebec, you know, defeated by the French, defeated by the British in 1759, a small number of French Quebecers have been able to become now 6-7 million people in their own province, in their own nation, in quote-unquote they have a tremendous concern about preserving their language and their culture. And when you look at the province, you find that 70% of those people would describe themselves as Pure Len, of people whose ancestors on both sides, going back generation after generation, are French-speaking Quebecers. When you look at English Canada, you're looking at only 20% who would be Pure Len Anglo, right? White Anglo-Saxon and Protestant. So the whole context of English Canada is that there's when immigrants are coming to English Canada, we're not asking them to assimilate into the WASP majority because there is no such thing anymore. So essentially then, English Canada is really multicultural Canada, and when you're coming to English Canada, you're essentially starting a story that's going to help define someday what is English Canada going to be all about, and it'll be some mosaic or melting pot of people from all over the world. Going to Quebec, however, it's more like going to France or going to Germany or going to a place that has a core ethnocultural identity or linguistic identity and something that the people have spent a lot of time fighting to preserve. And so there is a greater ambivalence in Quebec about minorities coming and the degree to which that they are going to adopt the language and the culture of Quebec. It's interesting that the PQ has said they want to make sure the thing they're concerned about is the linguistic side of things, and they want to make sure that people do adopt and use the French language, and Statistics Canada surveys show that in fact that is happening, and that linguistic minorities are adopting French as the language of work, and that increasing numbers are, using French at home and in other settings. So that's the concern, I think, has a lot to do with language, and then it has something also to do with, in Quebec, with culture. And it's interesting that the province that was the most religious in the 1950s is now the least religious. There was a massive questioning of Roman Catholicism in Quebec over the last 50 years. And I think there may be a concern on the part of Quebecers who have this hard-fought separation of church and state, of what they considered throwing off the yoke of Roman Catholicism that seemingly ran Quebec society for a couple of centuries. And I think they're concerned with groups coming to Quebec who have a much more traditional orientation to religiosity, to religion, the importance of religion, and so on. And I think Quebecers are maybe kind of concerned that the acceptance of a more secular society is something that's happening all too slowly in Quebec. But I think in the bottom line, however, of all of this questioning of immigration and multiculturalism and reasonable accommodation is that the Taylor-Bouchard Commission traveled throughout the province. They started in the rural areas where a lot of people who had no interaction with immigrants at all voiced a lot of sometimes bigoted and prejudiced comments. But as the commission got closer to Montreal, they actually found in places where the vast majority of immigrants are settling that reasonable accommodation was taking place in the workplace, in the schools, and elsewhere. So I suspect that you're going to see a report come down, and I guess it's going to be fairly soon, that's going to say that maybe Quebecers should relax a bit, that the system is working quite well, and that accommodations will be made because people are going to be focusing on what's actually happening on the ground, and on the ground you're seeing successful multiculturalism taking place.
Well, Michael, we could talk forever because this is obviously a very fascinating book, and I do advise people that they pick it up because it answers a lot of questions, it asks a lot of questions as well. What are you working on now, Michael?
Well, you're asking an author that when he's just still in the process of talking about the current book is a bit daunting. So what you have to do is maybe give a guy like me the winter and the spring to sort of spend a lot of time talking about Unlike a Utopia. For the summer, I'll probably goof off and take a vacation and play a little golf. And then, back to work, back to school in the fall, and I imagine that I'm going to given that this is my fifth book, something is going to happen out there in the world that I'm going to say, gee, I think I need to spend another year, year and a half focusing on this topic. And that's essentially what a book is that you get a topic you're interested in, and then you spend a year or year and a half teaching, learning about what's actually really going on in the world, gathering data from Stats Canada and our own surveys and other people's work and so on. Maybe it's a book that'll be more global. Maybe it'll be digging deeper into some issues that are happening in Canada. I can tell you that I have a personal interest. I don't know where it comes from, but it's maybe just curiosity. But I am extremely interested in the evolution of demographic and social change among Canadian Aboriginal populations. We've just had a census release in the last couple of weeks showing the majority of Aboriginals now living in our cities. It seems to me we have a demographic tsunami happening in our country, and particularly in the big cities of Western Canada. And I am rather curious about to see if I can discover an image of a sustainable, happy future with a high standard of living, a high quality of life for Aboriginal people who've left at least periodically and throughout the year back and forth perhaps, but have left their nations to come to the multicultural nations of urban Canada, and again, what that sustainable future with great parents, happy employees, happy entrepreneurs, and happy kids, what does that look like? So that could be my next project. We'll see.
You know, I must say, and I'm not just saying this because you're on, but your books are highly readable. They're fascinating, as I said earlier.
Well, thank you.
And they're interesting, and so, it's always a pleasure to have you on, Michael, and to talk about your books and your work.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your calling me.
The book is called Unlikely Utopia, The Surprising Triumph of Canadian Pluralism, $34 from Viking. I'm Joseph Plante.